Hello, friends of Soul Kitchen. Welcome to a new episode. Today, I'm sitting with Lou Lee, and we're going to talk about human design. Lou has a fascinating background. She was born in China. When she was 6 years old, she moved to Germany. She has spent a lot of time in London and in Switzerland, and nowadays she's living in Portugal. And she has some similarities, like myself. So she also worked with McKinsey a long time ago. And she has had many adventures between McKinsey and now human design. And human design is fascinating to me because it helped me understand myself and also how I'm wired and how my energy works. And it gave me also, because of human design, I gave myself the permission to do multiple things at the same time. And Lou has also written a book called Dear Female Founder, where she asked 66 female entrepreneurs to share their wisdom with female founders. And she also has run projects within the female entrepreneur space in London and is an entrepreneur and sometimes a consultant. So Lou, I'm very excited to meet with you. I met you at a party where you started talking about human design so passionately. So why are you so passionate about human design?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jasper. I'm excited to be here. And I love human design because I think it gives you a really, really in-depth insight into your personality, your kind of, you know, authentic self, if you will. And I couldn't believe what I sort of, you know, found out through the framework. And I've been interested in loads of different personality tests. I've done all the ones, you know, like MBTI at McKinsey, StrengthFinder at Procter & Gamble, and multiple other things, astrology and Enneagram and all of these, you know, frameworks. And human design just kind of, you know, tied it all together and just gave me such a broad, you know, insight into who I am, who the people around me are, that I just found it super fascinating. And it's pretty new still. It's up and coming, getting more and more popular, but I feel like it's still such a hidden gem.
Mm. And can you share about your own human design and what it taught you?
So I'm a pure generator. Let's step it back. So in human design, what you can find out is your general type, which would tell you more about, you know, your energy and how much energy you have, what you could use your energy for and all that. Then also it gives you insight into, like, are you doing the right things in life, you know, and when do you feel, when could you know that you're not doing the right things, mm-hmm. right? I think a lot of people, you know, have pushed themselves to do things in life that were not aligned with their true self, but then they thought that this is what they were supposed to do. And I have done a lot of that in my life. So that was kind of really amazing insight. Then you also have a so-called profile in human design, which is made up of two numbers. And these two numbers tell you a bit how you show up in life or how you're supposed to show up in life. That's kind of like your natural energies, right, that are most aligned to you. I'm a 3-5 as a profile in human design, mm-hmm. which means that throughout my life, I'm going to experiment with a lot of different things, which can work out or cannot work out. That's just part of my life. And it helped me accept, because I've done so many different things in my life. I've always been, you know, kind of very optimistic about doing all of these things. And of course, not everything works out. So over time, you'd be like, oh, man, it kind of bums you out a little bit. And you do feel like you failed, right? Mm-hmm. In, you know, many things, actually. And you start to question yourself. And knowing that, you know, kind of also gave me a bit the acceptance that, you know what, it's actually okay, you know? Because it's that was this what I felt, you know, sort of what I felt the energy to do at that time. It wasn't the right thing. And now I've learned. Mm.
So it gave you certain self-acceptance.
Self-acceptance and also the permission to kind of keep on experimenting and doing new things, right? Because when you have done a lot of things that didn't work out, it also can, you know, give you that feedback of, okay, maybe I shouldn't try, like, you know, maybe I should go down the safe path, you know, and yeah.
Yeah. And can you give an example of something that you maybe failed at that, well, when you understood human design better, you were kind of okay with?
I mean, basically, after I left my corporate career in 2012, so it's been a while, I didn't really know. I quit my job at P&G without really knowing what to do next. I knew that I wanted to leave and I wanted to do my own thing, but I didn't, you know, really know exactly. So then, you know, I jumped onto the first thing, which was, actually few people know about this, actually. I trained as an image consultant.
Image consultant.
Yes, and I actually worked as an image consultant for like a year and a half kind of thing, right? And you're probably wondering, like, what the heck is
but
that
you mean
even?
Public image?
Just like your general image, basically, right? Mm. So there's a thing, well, maybe I made it up. I called it the ABC of image, which means stands for appearance, behavior, and communication, mm-hmm. right? So your image, you know, that people build or they sort of perceive of you consists of your appearance, your behavior, and your communication. So if you want to change your image or you want to kind of up-level your image, you can work on your appearance, and that literally includes personal styling, mm-hmm. your behavior, how you walk, how you talk, how you kind of body, how your body posture is, and your communication, how you talk, how you present, et cetera. And I was mainly working with women in the sort of middle management level in the corporate world to help them elevate usually their leadership mm-hmm. image so they would be considered for promotions, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so that was something that I did with, I thought like, oh, you know, I like it. I'm good at it. I'm interested in this. But as a business model, it's like the worst business model you can do, basically. Because if you're really good at doing the job, it's a one-off thing, right? Because people would understand, and my clients were very smart people, right? And they would never come back to you. No. So you spend 90% of your time trying to, you know, acquire new clients and only 10% of the time actually doing the actual work.
Yeah.
And then you have to start again, basically, right? And, you know, there's like other things as well, but I basically, you know, stopped doing it after like a year and a half.
Yeah. I see.
Tried other things.
So that's an example of something that you experimented with, but then you reinvented yourself. And if you look at human design, because we touched upon your design, but can you broadly describe maybe the different types in the human design?
Yeah, so there's five types in human design. There are the pure generator, the manifesting generator, the pure manifester, or just manifester, the projector, and the reflector. And how they differ is basically their energy, right? So if you have, in human design, there's 9 energy centers, and the one that creates the energy to do anything in life, like the, you know, the life force and creation kind of energy, is the sacral center. If you have the sacral center defined in your chart, it means that you are a generator. Mm-hmm. By definition. And then you could have, you know, your pure generators that have the sacral center defined and potentially other centers. And then you have your manifesting generators, which you are one mm-hmm. of. And you have your sacral center defined and also your throat center, which is the manifesting center. And then you have pure manifestors, which are people that have their throat defined, potentially other centers, but not the sacral center. Mm-hmm. Right? And then you have projectors that basically don't have the sacral center defined, but could have other centers defined. Mm-hmm. And then you have the reflector, which is the rarest type of all types. There's only like 1% of all, you know, human beings are reflectors. Those are people who have none of their 9 centers defined. So they're completely open and they absorb a lot of energy from other people. And yeah, it's quite rare to find a reflector.
And what's the role, because it's only 1%, what's the role of this person in society?
That's a good question. I mean, that's basically, it's probably quite hard for those people in our current society, because our current society is a society that's built by generators for generators. Mm-hmm. It's a world where your value is derived from achieving, doing stuff, you know, more productivity, right? The reflector is like the complete opposite to it, right? Like there are people who make decisions, you know, very slowly because they get impacted by so many different things, right? They don't really know what to do, basically. And they're not supposed to, basically, right? But those people are the people that gain the most wisdom out of everyone, because when in human design, when you have a center defined, it means that you have consistent energy in the center, which means that you have natural strength in it. You have your certain ways how to do it, but you're also kind of fixed mm-hmm. in, you know, doing certain things, right? If you have an open center, that's when you know can you might be, you know, sort of more receptive, right, to other people's energies or ideas or, you know, knowledge or whatever. And that's where you can gain wisdom over time, because you're sampling all of those energies, wisdoms, etc., from other people. So reflectors, their whole existence consists of sampling from everybody else. And it can be a very confusing kind of like thing, right? But then, you know, when they do that, they are the most, you know, open, like compassionate, like wise people at the end, because they're just so, like, you know, like absorbing and wise, ideally.
So they're most open. And can you give an example of a famous person or known person who is a reflector?
You know what? I haven't looked too much into the celebrity part. So I couldn't tell you who is a famous reflector. Yeah.
I think after the episode, we can look into it.
We can look into it, definitely.
Okay, but that's interesting. So they're open, so they're receptive for information. And you spoke about reinventing yourself, that once you became more aware about your design, you accept certain things or you can reinvent yourself. Can you share examples of people that you've met that after becoming more aware of human design, how they reinvented themselves?
Yeah, I actually have a reflector friend, actually. Okay. And for her, it was like the biggest revelation, right? Because she used to be an actress. Her name is Liana Nielsen, by the way. She also has a podcast, people can check it out.
What's the name of the podcast?
Loving Through It, I think. Okay. I hope I got it right. Sorry, Liana, if I got it wrong. But she used to be an actress in the US, and that was her life, right? And then she done a reading and she's found out that she is a reflector, and everything just, you know, made so much sense, right? And she then kind of, you know, accepted her personal energy, why she's just a bit slow in certain things, right? When she can't make decisions and, you know, and just like it takes a while, but then at some point it just kind of comes out, right? And that she has to, you know, just be patient with herself and what is like the right thing for her, basically, right? So it's quite a hard thing to actually accept and then to sort of adapt your life according to it. But, you know, she's gone on the journey, and it's an ongoing journey as every life. But she's, you know, left her acting career, became a health coach, started a podcast. And she's constantly evolving according to what she's sampling now, I guess, in terms of energy.
Amazing. So she has changed herself because of the design. And a question related to this, I think in life you can initiate things and you can respond. Mm-hmm. So how does it work, whether it's better, you know, to initiate or respond based on your energy type? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because most people are brought up to kind of be goal-getters, right? Because that's how we achieve success. You have to know where you're going, you know, go from A to B, blah, blah, blah. But that initiating energy doesn't work for most people. It actually only works for the pure manifestors that, you know, almost kind of like are supposed to initiate, right? So these are literally the people, I mean, their sort of communication strategy is to inform, or like their general kind of like strategy is to inform people. And in the human design sort of theory, those people used to be the kings and queens of the ancient days, where you basically have this person on the top who basically informs all the other people in the kingdom what to do, and then things would happen, right? That's not quite the world that we, you know, live now anymore. And now we have a lot more generators in the world, like 2/3 of people are born, you know, with their energy types as generators. And generators are supposed to respond to something. The good news is that, you know, you're not just sitting here and waiting to respond, although that is your strategy, right? So manifestor was to inform, and yours is, ours is way to respond. Mm-hmm. We can respond to many, many things, right? We can respond to any type of stimuli. It could be, you know, another person, a question, something you see on social media, something you hear, et cetera. It's really about like whatever your inner authority, that's another term in human design, is like how you're supposed to make decisions. Whatever your inner authority tells you, this is the right thing for you to engage with. Right. And that is something that a lot of people naturally do, right? Like, let's do an example. Like, somebody's, you know, inviting you to kind of join a project or something, right? And then people will be like, oh yes, great. Oh, I'm happy to do that, right? Or they're like, oh no, I don't have time or energy to do that, right? For generators, like the response is actually a yes or no, usually kind of binary kind of thing. And that's like the difference between, you know, informing and responding. And if your type is a generator, you would do really well to kind of like think about and reflect a little bit about how did you get into the, let's say, most successful projects that you have ever done, or like the most kind of the best experiences, basically, mm-hmm. right? Like, was that something that really came to your mind sitting on the couch and be like, this would be a great idea, let's create this? Or was it a situation where somebody or something, you saw something, you responded to it,
yeah,
and you'd be like, okay, this is something I want to do,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah, I recognized when COVID came and there was a lockdown, then I responded with a campaign with my brother. We created a website where people could share thank you messages, mm-hmm. For healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. But it was really a response to a certain thing.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
How do you balance initiating versus responding yourself? Or can you share how you approach it?
So I have initiated a lot, right? Because I was brought up like that. If you want something, you know, I mean, my family were immigrants, right? Mm-hmm. If you want anything, you have to go for it, kind of mm-hmm. thing, right? And I think, you know, in certain ways, like, it sort of like got me somewhere. But it probably didn't get me where I'm really supposed to go, let's say, right? And I don't want to say, like, initiating is bad. Like, you know, it will get you somewhere, basically, right? And I think it's good for people to, you know, get that sense of accomplishment on certain things. But I have multiple times, you know, like, I was like, oh, being an image consultant could be a good idea, right? After that, I became a marketing consulting, a consultant in travel. And I was helping... I was working with retailers like Selfridges or Fortnum & Mason in London to help them with attracting more Chinese tourists, basically, right? Completely different, right? And then I was like, oh, yeah, this could be a great idea, you know, because, I mean, you know, McKinsey style, you look at the market, you'd be like, oh, Chinese tourists are growing as a, you know, kind of customer base who could, you know, benefit from that, et cetera. Like, and I completely came up with the idea myself, right? Also didn't work out, right? Then, you know, I mean, I had the idea for Blooming Founders that did work out to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. And last year I had the idea to start a startup in the Web3 space mm-hmm. as well. And that didn't work out, basically, yeah. Right? So, you know, there's like a lot of things that I thought like, oh, this could be a good idea.
Yeah.
But if I'm not responding to stuff, like, it usually doesn't work out in the end.
Oh, that's very vulnerable of you to share. And if you look at your current project or business, CRC,
yeah.
Can you share what it is? And to what extent do you feel you responded to something or did you initiate?
Yeah. The response thing is like, it can be, you can also intellectualize it a lot, you know, to be honest. But with CRC, I was on a journey to basically help myself discover what the heck am I supposed to do, right? Because I felt that I could do so many different things. It was really hard to decide. And I had all these ideas, mm-hmm. right? But then my practical experience kind of taught me, like, maybe you should be a bit more discerning about your ideas. And in that search, you know, I was like, okay, well, look, friends actually brought it up. You're like, oh, have you looked into your human design? I was like, what is that? And then I looked into it and then the whole rabbit hole kind of like, you know, opened up. And then I dove so deep into it that not only I understood more about, you know, who I was, but then also I used it to say, okay, well, if I really want to sort of, you know, stay true to this, what type of business should I be be doing, basically, right? And for me, the hardest thing to realize in my chart is that I only have three centers defined in my chart. So I actually don't have that much energy overall, like, you know, people like you. Mm-hmm. And but then I'm so used to doing and accomplishing things, right, that it didn't sit well with my identity or like my own understanding of myself. And that took a while to sort of really accept that, okay, well, let's give it a go, right? And I decided to lean into it. And the more I leaned into it, okay, well, you know, business mind comes on and be like, let's have a look at, like, you know, how many people are operating in this space. And I discovered that Google searches, like Google Trend, if you type in human design and Google Trend, you can see like last 5 years, it's like going up like crazy.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Right. So then I had like, you know, evidence and I responded to that. I was like, wow, there's so many more people are searching for human design and just looking that information up. And I've always been, you know, a good communicator, I want to say, and I love sharing, you know, with other people. So I decided to start a company, Seer Z, and the brand name is made out of the word seer, which is, you know, the person who can look in the future, like a supernatural ability to look into the future or see something, right? Like seer. And then I guess SY, like to me, my sort of head was like seeing yourself. And that was really the starting point, right, of the business that I'm building right now, which is all around human design, but not only, it is really about seeing yourself. I mean, human design is such a big lens to see yourself through. But in the future, I also want to, like, you know, open up to other modalities and tools of how to see yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And the tagline at the moment is see yourself and thrive. To, you know, really empower people to be themselves and do the things that bring them joy and are the most aligned things.
I think it's really cool. And at your LinkedIn profile, I read something, if I remember correctly, like a media brand to bring human design to the masses.
Yes.
So to what extent is it the media brand and to what extent is it a coaching or consulting offering?
Yeah, that's also the journey I've gone through in this year, right? So I started the company in February 2024, and the original idea was to launch a media brand, as it's sort of shown on my LinkedIn profile at the moment. But then I realized that, and that is really driven by, you know, the Google Trends kind of thing, because mm-hmm. there's so many people looking up human design, wanting to understand it, so they want, you know, information about it. But in practicality, it takes time to build a media brand, right? It takes time to create content. It takes time for that content to get traction, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you have a podcast, you know, right? Yeah. You do it for years on
end. Persistence is important, yeah.
Persistence, consistency, et cetera, et cetera, right? And it's just like, you know, it's just natural. It just takes time for this to build. So just, you know, for cash flow reasons, I was like, okay, well, maybe I should offer it as a service because that, you know, you can monetize right away. And then when I started doing, you know, individual sessions with people around the human design, I realized that it is so much information that it's very hard for people to absorb and even like understand or, you know, integrate, right? And that's where the coaching then, you know, came in, where like, if I really want to help people use this information and, you know, sort of go on this journey to get to their goal, which usually is also a transformation and reinvention of themselves, it has to be a longer process, right? So that's where then the coaching came in, because it takes time to change yourself, right? Like we have so many beliefs in our heads about us, our identity, that we hold on to because it's so familiar. It takes time to kind of unpeel that. So I would say like 3 to 6 months is pretty much, you know, what you should be investing to this work.
So you want to combine a media component with a coaching component. I think that makes sense. And talking about the Google Trends increase, I also had a sense that human design is getting more and more popular. I saw a Dutch podcast where they also mentioned human design is getting more popular and they were talking about it. So why do you think this is getting more popular? What are kind of the macro trends that this is increasing in popularity?
Well, I think overall people are more open to spiritual things now. Mm-hmm. Right? You can also see that astrology is has already gotten pretty popular and is getting more popular, you know, by the day. And I feel on a macro level, people are looking for maybe different information mm-hmm. or different answers potentially. I mean, we grew up in a very, you know, homogenous society, right? It's like, you go to school, you go to college, you have a job, you have your career, you marry, you have kids, yada, and then you retire and then you can enjoy life kind of thing. Mm. But I think a lot of people know by now, I mean, after the financial crisis in 2008, after COVID, everything that happens in between, you know, I think people just realize that's just not really, it doesn't work, basically. There's no such thing as job security. You see loads of people, you know, in your circles of friends and family that are unhappy, stuck in their jobs and stuck in their, you know, whatever situation they're in. And then you look at it and you'd be like, I don't really want that for me, right? Like if I can, you know, do something else, like I would. And startups became really popular and that was like an escape, right? From the corporate sort of world, like a load of people, you know, jumped into startups kind of hoping that this would give them something, you know, where they're free, they can do, you know, their own idea. And then they realize like literally 99% of startups fail. So maybe, you know, let's have another think about this, right? Like not everybody has to be an entrepreneur really. But yeah, I think a lot of like things change in our society in the last 10 to 20 years that now people are a little bit more open because they just have seen so many models not working, yeah. Right? So it's like, okay, well, what else is out there kind of thing? And then, you know, they become curious. I mean, like, okay, well, maybe, you know, maybe this could be something.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. And to what extent do you feel COVID has contributed in accelerating the popularity of human design?
I think people just had a lot of time yeah. in COVID, right? To look into all sorts of stuff, basically. Yeah. I mean, you know, and it's a rabbit hole, right? Like it's quite complicated when, you know, you have the chart. That's why, you know, people like me or other people who can, you know, translate it to you that really help, right? But if you have a lot of time, right, then you just Google everything around it and then you fall into the rabbit hole, you connect with other people, you know, like that are passionate about the same thing and then you get into it, right? Yeah. Like I think with every sort of interest-based community, when people are really into it, like they're really into it, yeah. right? And there's a lot of people who are really into it.
Yeah,
and then
know.
You can't stop talking about it, right?
Yeah, it's fascinating once you discover it. I'm happy to rediscover it because of this episode. Yesterday I was reading a chart. I'm curious, so thank you for sharing this trends. I'm curious, you're an entrepreneur and you wrote a book, or I can also say you curated the book called Dear Female Founders, where you asked 66 women to share their wisdom and advice for female founders. I think it was a very smart idea. If you summarize a bit the learnings of this book, like what did you learn from this book that you apply now in your life as an entrepreneur?
There's so many different viewpoints, right? And that's actually what I'm trying to kind of do in the book as well, that, you know, it's not just like one narrative. That was one of the goals, actually. So it's like 66 different women from 20 different countries all around the world. I really made an effort because most of the women are, you know, from the US, from the UK, but I really was really trying to kind of get contributions from mm-hmm. all over. So you have a lot of different viewpoints, right? But I think for me, I think always, right? It's kind of like sticking to your own guns, right? There's, you know, even if you feel you're not quite ready to do the thing, you know, put yourself out there. And I struggle with it myself still, right? I mean, it's like I've done all of these things and I still kind of question, like, is it the right thing to do? Like, who am I to kind of like be doing it kind of thing, right? For example, with the coaching, I don't have a coaching certification. And I also don't think I need one. Mm. Like, I think a good coach is somebody who ideally has lived through the same similar experience and has gained like practical wisdom around whatever topic you're coaching. And is somebody who's so really empathetic and understands the client. Mm. If you have these two ingredients, I think you can become a great coach, right? Because why do you have to have a certification kind of thing, right? So, but a lot of, you know, women in particular, they're like, oh, you know, but I have to certify as a coach, et cetera, before I can do this. And then, you know, and I have to do multiple certifications. And then what you do is like, you kind of outsource your power to the certification and you're like not really trusting yourself, basically, right? So I think, you know, that like trusting yourself and then kind of following that is was one of the things. And that was pretty much also the first letter in the book. That's a lady called Alex DePledge, amazing entrepreneur. She's onto her second company now, also very successful. And then the last, I think was the last letter in the book as well. I'm not sure if it's the last one, actually. It's been a while. I published the book in 2016, so it's 8 years now. Wow. But also the last one was very impactful for me because that was a lady that also completely changed her life. She used to be a professional model, actually. And now she runs a tech company and they work with airlines, they work with cybersecurity, airport security, all of that stuff, basically. Mm. So like going from there to here is like such a crazy journey, basically. She also used to be a single mom, you know, when I actually met her. So there was like loads of different things that life can throw into your, you know, into your direction. And you can still, you know, kind of come out of it like a phoenix from the ashes, if you will. And create something great for you, basically, right? And you don't have to be stuck to one identity.
No. So one was start before you're ready and the other was like, you can change identities. And
start before you're ready. Don't like outsource your permission or your power to something else, basically, outside of yourself.
Hmm. Beautiful lessons. And I think it's comes across as a beautiful project where you learn a lot yourself because you get 66 pieces of advice.
Yes, exactly.
And then you share it with others.
It's like 66 mentors you never had, basically.
Yeah,
right?
Amazing. Yeah. So if someone doesn't know anything about human design at this, and the person is listening, like, how do you start?
It's a good question. Well, you can go to a website. You can just Google human design chart, free. And you can find lots of websites that will give you a calculator. So you can, what you need to get your chart, your body chart in human design is your birth details. So your birth date, time, and your location, right? If you don't have your exact time, like don't worry about it. Maybe, you know, ask your mom or your dad, like, you know, approximate time. If you completely do not know when you were born, maybe check on the same day, like every kind of like 2 hours, I want to say, and see whether that changes like something in the chart. In most cases, it doesn't change that much. In some cases, it will change something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you can, you know, go on like any of the websites. My current website doesn't have a calculator yet, but it will come. And then you get, you know, the chart for free. And then you can, you know, also look up like, you know, how to read a human design chart, right? And there will be blogs to kind of guide you through, you know, what does all of these things kind of mean. You can go on Searzy. I actually have a blog post about that as well. And that's where you start, right? So you can, you know, then understand the big components, your energy type, your strategy and authority, your inner authority, how you make decisions, your profile, and then your centers, like which centers are defined and not defined. These are like the sort of the most immediate things that you can do, because you know, you only have one type, you have one strategy and authority, you have one inner authority, you have one profile, and then you have 9 centers that can be either defined, which will be colored in your chart, or white, which is then undefined. And then if you want to go then deeper, you can look at the gates. There are 64 gates in total in human design, and each of these gates correspond to certain energies, which are your natural talents, actually. So if you want to use human design to understand your natural talents, what I'm really good at, what are my strengths, which I should be leaning into, you should look at your gates, basically. Everybody has between like 22 to 27 gates activated and colored in the chart. So then, you know, you look at all of those numbers and you go one by one. And I have an article on my website actually about each of the gates, what they mean, what you're like.
One article per gate.
One article per gate, basically. Yeah. So you can literally just, you know, go on CRZ.com. You can put like gate six, and then you would find the article on gate six, which is the gate of conflict. And then you can see like, you know, what are my strengths with this gate? What does the not self look like with this gate? Because nothing in human design is actually good or bad, right? The gate of conflict, I don't know why it came to my mind. I mean, I actually have it, so maybe that's why. The gate of conflict, right? It's like, who wants to have a gate of conflict? It sounds pretty bad, basically, right? But, you know, the positive version of that is actually you are able to navigate conflict, right? And conflict, the gate of conflict sits in the emotional center in human design, and it's like the one that comes out of the emotional center. And to me, emotional maturity is about, and actually not to me, just I think it's even in general, emotional maturity is really about your capacity to handle and overcome conflict. That healthy communication between two people when a conflict situation arises brings them emotionally closer. That's like the highest level of emotional intimacy that you can actually can have, because if you're able to navigate a conflict, you build trust with each other, right? Because you realize, okay, I can communicate with this other person without us kind of like trying to kill each other, basically, right? So we can actually go somewhere, right? And we can develop from here. And I can, you know, like that person is still here. It's not trying to kill me. And I'm still here. I'm not trying to kill the other person. So it's a good thing in the end, right? So that was a tangent on the gate of conflict. But but just to say that nothing in human design is good or bad, and therefore every energy has a good expression and a negative expression, right? Because if you have a negative expression of the gate of conflict, then you might be someone that avoids conflict, right? You're a people pleaser, very, you know, uncomfortable about talking anything that feels uncomfortable to you or to other people. You don't want to stir up a pot. Or you could be someone who kind of stirs up the pot, like on purpose to kind of create a conflict because you're gaining something out of it, right? So that's also an unhealthy expression of the same energy.
And another gate is commitment, right?
Yes.
Because that's in my
design. that's your one of your most important energies that guides your life.
So can you share this about this gate?
Yeah, so the gate of commitments, the gate 29, sits in the sacral center, so the life force energy creation center, and that's the gate of basically saying yes, right? It's like, what energy do you have that you want to then commit to creating something, right? So in the ideal expression, it is about your individual creation and using your natural energy, committing to the right thing to bring it to life, right? But if you say yes to the wrong things, you know, you're not using this energy correctly, and then you might get stuck into a situation where people kind of then, you know, then you're committed, right? And people expect stuff from you. You might have said yes too quickly, didn't really think about it, or like, or just got so excited about it. Right? It could be anything. And then you find yourself, crap, like I can't, you know, back out now. And now I have to spend my energy doing something I don't really want to do, but I can't really get out either, right? So being sort of discerning about how you spend your energy is very important for the gate of commitment. Or, you know,
so not say yes too quickly.
Not say yes too quickly. Exactly.
And is that because there's also about emotional authority or how you make decisions? And some people can do it immediately. Some people need to think about it one night. What is that part of design?
So that's the link to the energy centers, or I mean, it's the inner authority, right? Everybody has an inner authority. The inner authority is how you are supposed to make decisions in your life. And I always say, like, make the big decisions, right? Like, not really what you have to for dinner. I mean, that's okay. But big decisions like, you know, what do I do for work? Who do I choose as my partner? Where do I want to live? Kind of thing, right? Like, big. So 50% of people have emotional authority. There's a hierarchy, actually. So the emotional authority is, like, the highest. If you have your emotional center defined in your chart, you're automatically emotional authority, right? If you don't have your emotional authority defined and you have your sacral center defined, you have a sacral authority. And then it goes to the spleen, the splenic authority, your ego, and your identity center, your G center. And depending on, you know, which one you have, it's really worthwhile to understand this is how I'm supposed to make decisions, mm-hmm. right? So for somebody with an emotional authority, so both of us actually, yeah. it's about waiting for emotional clarity. Mm-hmm. So it's not as authority where you should be making decisions in the now, in mm-hmm. the instant. That's a sacral authority, right? So people with a sacral authority, they do really well, you know, with a sacral response of yes or no, mm-hmm. right? It's like, do you want to, you know, I don't know, like, what do you want to do on the weekend? Do you want to go to the beach or do you want to go hiking? Right? They like instantly can say, I want to go to the beach. Mm. Right? For people like us, like, you know, you might not have that direct response. You'd be like, oh, yeah, both sound great, actually. You know, like, let me think about it. Right? And, you know, this is maybe like a smaller decision, right? But for people with an emotional kind of authority, it's like waiting for that emotional wave. And everybody can have different waves. To kind of clarify. So for us, it's important to know that we should not make decisions when we feel on an emotional high or on an emotional low.
Yeah.
So if you feel super excited, and that's when you in particular can say yes too quickly because you get super excited, or when you feel like super duper low and you'd be like, oh no, nothing isn't working. I shouldn't be doing this, like whatever, you know, also not good basically, yeah. right? So wait until you find like a bit of a equilibrium in your emotional state and you feel a bit calmer basically and clearer with everything and then make a decision. Mm. Right.
Yeah. So it's important sometimes to, when you're in a high or low, not to decide immediately. But
yes, exactly. Moment, yeah. Exactly. So it's because things are probably not that great as you think when you're on your emotional high, and things are probably not that bad as you would think if you're emotional low either.
I think that's a very important reminder. And so thank you for that. And human design can help you towards becoming more your authentic self. And part of human design is this not self theme. So in my case, it's frustration. And it resonates a lot because sometimes I feel frustrated.
Yes.
But can you explain, I mean, we already touched upon these things, but how would you summarize how human design helps you to grow into your authentic self? And what role does this not self play in that?
Yeah. So the not self comes in all sacred forms, basically. Mm-hmm. Like also like each of the gates, right, can have a not self theme. But when people talk about not self in human design, it's like related to your main kind of like strategy and authority, which basically means what are the things that you're engaging with? And are you making the right decisions about it, right? So if you engage with the wrong things, you might have made the right decision, but you just chose the wrong thing, basically, then you will feel frustrated, right? So it's kind of like, how do you know that you're doing the right thing or the wrong thing in human design, right? So generators like us, we would start to feel frustrated. Projectors would start to feel bitter or unrecognized or unseen. Manifestor would just get straight up angry, right? So, you know, people have different not so themes according to that, and they correspond to your energy type, basically. And they're the same. So all the generators have the same not self theme, all the manifestors have the same not self theme, and all the projectors have the same not self theme. So whenever you find yourself in a situation as a manifesting generator or a generator, when you feel frustrated, it's a good time to step back and think whether you're still in the right situation. You know, maybe it might just be a blip and that's fine. You know, stuff happens. But if it happens consistently and you're not, you know, you're feeling more and more frustrated, then it's really something to be looked at, right? And maybe kind of think, maybe I have made the right, wrong decision, right? Maybe I should get myself out of this situation.
Yeah.
Right. So, or, you know, if you're a manifestor and you find yourself getting angry, like you're just exploding all the time, basically, you'd be like, okay, something is wrong, right?
Yeah.
So these are just kind of signals, like warning signals, if you will, that we're not in alignment with our design and our sort of most fulfilling life, let's say.
So with human design, you become more aware of those and then you can act earlier.
Yes, self-correct. Step back, you know, reflect. Instead of trying to push through and just be like, I just suck it up, basically, you know, and even though I feel frustrated in a job or, you know, in a whatever dynamic in your family or your relationship, you just push through. It's going to, you know, somehow work out. Yeah. It's like, no, it's not going to work out. No. It's just going to get worse.
Yeah. So you can self-correct. I think that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I'm curious because you have worked with McKinsey in the past, and McKinsey is about consulting organizations. But in a way, part of you now is entrepreneur, part of you is also, let's say, human design coach. Mm-hmm. So now you're consulting people in a way, right?
Yeah.
So what have you learned at McKinsey that you use while coaching people on human design?
It's a good question. I mean, the one thing that I remember from my time at McKinsey is and that's probably a good segue actually to my recipe in life, actually. Mm-hmm. So the one principle that I remember from my time at McKinsey is the concept of MISI, which I'm sure you are familiar with, which stands for the audience who might not know. It's an acronym. It's M-E-C-E, MISI. And it stands for mutually exclusive, collectively exhaustive. And it's very much about looking into everything, right, that are different parts of something, of the whole, but collectively they're exhaustive and give you the whole picture, right? And I actually, as much as I love human design as a tool and a framework, I don't think it's the end-all be-all, basically, right? So I think there's like more, you know, more things that you should be looking at when it comes to understanding yourself, right? Human design will give you like a lot of information, but not everything. And that's also kind of, you know, what I do, you know, with the coaching. Like I use a lot of human design, but I also look into other things, right? I talk to people about, you know, their childhood traumas or, you know, like anything that can impact you in some sort of way that sort of made you the person that you are today is worthwhile considering, right? And also my recipe for life.
Yeah,
right?
What is your recipe for life? Tell me.
My recipe for life.
I'm happy you're bringing it up.
Exactly. is actually a formula, right?
Okay.
It's like, I think it's, that's, I guess maybe another thing I sort of took from
McKinsey. That's why it's connected to McKinsey, right?
It's like, yeah, it's, and it's, for me, it's also quite messy, I want to say.
Yeah.
Because I was really trying to like think about all the things that would have a meaningful impact on my life, and what are the variables, right, that are part of that.
Yeah.
And it was a bit more complicated, and then I sort of drilled it down. So like the final version is self-knowledge plus correct actions in parentheses times relationships.
Self-knowledge plus correct actions times relationships.
Yes. And that is the short version of, I guess, the original one, I suppose. And because self-knowledge breaks down to authenticity minus your trauma. And the correct actions is a combination of opportunities and decisions times the correctness of both of them. Right? So what I mean with that is every person that we encounter today and who we are is a combination of your nature and your nurture, right? Our nurture, unfortunately, for most people, has included some sort of trauma. And doesn't have to be a trauma with a big T, but it could be a trauma with a small T. And I actually come to realize that emotional neglect is so common in our society that everybody has some sort of, you know, trauma from that. So it's really to kind of, so self-knowledge equals your and understanding your authentic self minus the trauma that you might have experienced.
Yeah.
Right? To come to the true self.
Yeah.
So then once you know your true self in life, you have to amplify that with correct actions. Right? So correct actions are opportunities plus decisions times correctness for both. So what opportunities do you engage? So that's actually the strategy on authority and human design. Like what, you know, things do you engage with and what are the decisions that you're making around that, and are these correct, right? Because you're not making the correct decisions, you will just, you know,
yeah,
put yourself down a path that's not gonna go anywhere, right? So that makes self-knowledge plus correct actions, and then those two in parentheses times relationships, because relationships, in my opinion, underpins everything in life. And if you don't have the right relationships related to everything, and that includes the relationship with yourself,
yeah,
that's why relationship, you know, applies to self-knowledge as well, then you're not gonna have a happy life, basically.
I think it's a beautiful formula, and as I understand it, the human design helps in the decision-making part. And then the trauma part, is that also, can you learn about that with human design, or you need like another something for that?
You can have indications. So every undefined center or open center, right, is where we tend to take on energies, or, you know, from other people or from the society, right? So if, you know, you have an open emotional center, for example, or an open heart or ego center, or an open intuition center, those can be combinations where you can get, you know, emotional trauma, like, quite easily, because you're so absorbent, right, of, you know, things that are happening around you. And your own, like, intuition, emotions, or your own ego are quite malleable, right? So you can have indications in human design, and then also depending on, I guess, you know, which gates are activated and all that, you can have, you know, so you can see when people are more likely prone to being impacted and less likely prone to be impacted, which is also, you know, could explain when two children grow up in the same household, right, with the same parent dynamics, one, you know, gets impacted and the other one doesn't, right? It could be in their design as well.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. So there are certain indications. And for instance, with the open heart center, I learned yesterday actually that maybe you want to prove yourself.
Yep.
So how do you look at the opportunities and the decision making in relationship to wanting to prove yourself?
Yeah, so the first point is always awareness, right? So all the nine centers in human design, they stand for a theme, right? So the heart center, the ego center, stands for willpower, determination, self-worth. And the not self of that is I'm not enough, right? So because, you know, it's open, you kind of, you take on energies from the outside, basically. You don't have a strong enough ego yourself to kind of feel worthy yourself. That's what it kind of means, right? So then when you know that, and then you have a new opportunity coming your way, and then you feel like very excited about it, you know, check in with yourself, like, what is exactly excited? Like, what in me is excited about that? Is it my ego? Is it my true ego? Or is it my not self ego? Because this opportunity presents, you know, something where I can prove my worth, basically, right? Or is it an opportunity that genuinely excites me because I can show my skills? Very different motivations, essentially.
Yeah. Right? So would you say that when you do it from a place of proving, that it's not the correct action?
Exactly. Because it's not the real you, basically. You should be doing things because you feel good about it, right?
Yeah.
And it flows your boat, so to speak. Not kind of externalize your worth to something from the outside.
Yeah. Amazing formula. I really like it. And I can indeed see the McKinsey experience there. That's beautiful that you come up with this formula. And if you look at relationships, and if you look at these 66 letters that you have received / shared, what role did relationships play in these 66 letters?
Huge. I mean, I don't know. Like, I didn't know about 70% of the women who contributed, maybe even more. So a lot of them got introduced to me by people, right? So if I didn't have a good relationship with them, then they wouldn't have recommended me, you know, to those women. And the women might have not agreed, right? If it wouldn't have come from a warm introduction, as they say. And also, you know, kind of helped me build relationships through that, right? Like, I'm still in touch with some of the women. One of them, you know, became a mentor of mine. So there's lots of things that, you know, where relationship played a part to making the project happen.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, I we're coming to the end, and I maybe have two more questions. One is, what is your recommendation for me? Because you have read into my design related to the project or myself. Do you have something you want to share, like a tip for me?
Yes. So I think you are living pretty aligned with your human design in your current state. And it might have not always been the case for you, right? Because as a manifesting generator, you have a lot of energy. You might have, you know, dispersed your energy across projects that some worked, some maybe didn't work. But your purpose on this planet is really like, there's another thing in human design called the incarnation cross, which indicate your life theme, your life purpose. And yours is the cross of contagion, which means that you're here to literally spread something. And that could be, you know, messages through the podcast, you know, like ideas, right? Another thing that stood out in your design is that you're manifesting. So what makes you a manifesting generator is a channel that goes from your emotional center to your throat, which means that your creative expression is powered by your emotions and your feelings, or, you know, yours or in general, like, you know, emotions and feelings, basically. So your main contribution to this world is sharing, you know, like things that are related, that are powered by emotions and feelings to help other people also understand and kind of come closer to this type of theme. Another thing that stood out for in your design is actually you also have a lot of retrospective energies, actually. So you would do well to, and then you do that with, you know, your guests, right? Like, you ask me a lot of things about my past, right? And, you know, like retrospective things. It's a lot about like processing memories, processing things from the past, stories, experiences from the past to then share with others, which I think you do very, very well with, you know, the podcast and probably also, you know, through the retreats. You know, maybe it's interesting kind of to lean more into that as well, because that is literally, what you're here to do.
The retrospective energies. I never thought about it like that. It's very
there's
very
a lot insightful. Of details you can like see in a design when it comes to like an individual kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I will definitely dive deeper. Now I'm excited again to go deeper. So thank you for that. And my last question is there anything else that you want to share with the listener?
Is there anything else? Well, I would encourage everybody to discover their design and, you know, look it up and be open-minded and see, you know, what you find. If you want more information, obviously, Sirzi, we have, like, I've written like a lot of blog articles, you know, about all the different things. So I try to kind of make it very easy to understand for people, especially when they come from a more logical or like rational perspective. And I think, you know, you probably will discover a lot of things about yourself where you have a bit, you know, holy shit moments, and just be open-minded to something like that. But in any case, I hope everybody, you know, embarks on their quest and, you know, fulfills their vision for their life.
Thank you very much, Lou. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks, everyone.